We're going to go to Genesis chapter 42. Man, I almost think I could go into 43 at the same time. I had to play by ear. Let's just have Genesis 42 only.
When Jacob learned that there was grain in Egypt, he said to his sons, "Why do you just keep looking at each other?" He continued, "I have heard that there is grain in Egypt. Go down there and buy some for us so that we may live and not die." Then 10 of Joseph's brothers went down to buy grain from Egypt, but Jacob did not send Benjamin, Joseph's brother, and the others because he was afraid that harm might come to them. So Israel's sons were among those who went to buy grain, for the famine was in the land of Canaan also. Now Joseph was the governor of the land, the one who sold grain to all its people. When Joseph's brothers arrived, they bowed down to him and with their faces to the ground. As soon as Joseph saw his brothers, he recognized them, but he pretended to be a stranger and spoke harshly to them. "Where do you come from?" he asked. "From the land of Canaan," they replied, "to buy food." Although Joseph recognized his brothers, they did not recognize him. Then he remembered his dreams about them and said to them, "You are spies. You have come to see where our land is unprotected." "No, my lord," they answered. "Your servants have come to buy food. We are all the sons of one man. Your servants are honest men, not spies." "No," he said to them, "you have come to see where our land is unprotected." But they replied, "Your servants were 12 brothers, the sons of one man, who lives in the land of Canaan. The youngest is now with our father, and one is no more." Joseph said to them, "It is just as I told you, you are spies, and this is how you will be tested. As surely as Pharaoh lives, you will not leave this place unless your youngest brother comes here. Send one of your number to get your brother. The rest of you will be kept in prison so that your words may be tested to see if you are telling the truth. If you are not, then as surely as Pharaoh lives, you are spies." And he put them all in custody for 3 days. On the third day, Joseph said to them, "Do this and you will live, for I fear God. If you are honest men, let one of your brothers stay here in prison while the rest of you go and take grain back for your starving households. But you must bring your youngest brother to me so that your words may be verified and that you may not die." This they proceeded to do. They said to one another, "Surely we are being punished because of our brother. We saw how distressed he was when he pleaded for us with his life. But he would not listen. That's why this distress has come upon us. But we would not listen. That's why this distress has come upon us." Reuben replied, "Didn't I tell you not to sin against the boy? But you wouldn't listen. Now we must give an accounting for his blood." They did not realize that Joseph could understand them since he was using an interpreter. He turned away from them again to weep, but then turned back and spoke to them again. He had Simeon taken from them and bound before their eyes. Joseph gave orders to fill their bags with grain, to put each man's silver back in his sack, and to give them provisions for the journey. After this was done for them, they loaded their grain on the donkeys and left. At the place where they stopped for the night, one of them opened his sack to get feed for his donkey, and he saw his silver in the mouth of his sack. "My silver has been returned," he said to his brothers. "Here it is in my sack." Their hearts sank, and they turned to each other, trembling, and said, "What is this that God has done to us?" When they came to their father Jacob in the land of Canaan, they told him all that had happened to them. They said, "The man who is lord over the land spoke harshly to us and treated us as though we were spying on the land. But we said to him, 'We are honest men, we are not spies. We were 12 brothers, son of one father. One is no more, and the youngest is now with our father in Canaan.' Then the man who is lord over the land said to us, 'This is how I will know whether you are honest men. Leave one of your brothers here with me and take food for your starving households and go. But bring your youngest brother to me so I will know that you are not spies but honest men. And I will give your brother back to you, and you can trade in the land.'" As they were emptying their sacks, there in each man's sack was his pouch of silver. When they and their father saw the money pouches, they were frightened. Their father Jacob said to them, "You have deprived me of my children. Joseph is no more, and Simeon is no more. Now you want to take Benjamin. Everything is against me." Then Reuben said to his father, "You may put both of my sons to death if I do not bring them back to you. Entrust them to my care, and I will bring them back." But Jacob said, "My son will not go down there. My son will not go down there with you. His brother is dead, and he is the only one left. If harm comes to him on the journey you are taking, you will bring my gray head down to the grave in sorrow."
First of all, I want to express something. What did the brothers, in their mind, who were they talking to? What was his name? And what does it mean? I explained to that last week in detail. That which is hidden. Okay. The meaning of those two words here. The latter one in those is pronounced as pane, but it's got an ayin in it, so it's not, it does not mean face. It's got ayin in there, and now it's a different word. Nothing to do with it. Sorry, what? I'll have to look it up here. Zafnat pane. Zafnat. TZ sound. Zafnat pane. Revealed? Yes. Now, basically, there are different interpretations of it, but it has a basically, we're looking now not at the separation of what many people have separated the word meaning, and sometimes it means that one has a treasure. Well, and once it does have a treasure, it also has a meaning of the first word of the zafanet or zafanet, zafanat, is Hebrew word meaning that which to hide. So something is hidden. The latter part of that Hebrew word, which is pane, which has got an ayin in it, means to reveal. Hidden, revealed. So he was the one that was revealing things that were hidden.
Pretty much like the gospel, the mystery that was kept
more
hidden.
More like what he did to Pharaoh. He revealed something that was hidden. But who revealed it to Joseph in the first place? Elohim. Ha, Elohim. Very important to know that. Because when he addressed to Pharaoh, he said, Ha, Elohim. I mean, the God revealed this unto me. So this, what we're looking at, dreams are something that's really kind of hard to explain. But at the very same time, we look at this and we say, he is doing something. He knows where to go, that is Joseph, knew where to go to find that which was hidden. And if Elohim had not revealed it to him, then he could not reveal it. Make sense to you? Remember, he had the dreams of the butler, and he had the dreams of the baker. Now, they didn't understand it. Remember? And Pharaoh, when he had his dream, he didn't understand it. And all those that were knowledgeable of dreams couldn't. They didn't understand it. But all three times, Joseph says, there is a Elohim, Elohim that will reveal it. And so the dreams were told, and he explained what it was. Remember that? So he became the title. Pharaoh named him that because he is the one that is revealing something that's been hidden. Now, in our world, you live in the world of mysteries, don't you? The unknown. You have ideas and you think, well, I wonder what that means. I wonder what this means. I wonder where I'm going. Will I have a job? You know, we always have unknown things. What am I going to do for a living? You know, unknown. We have that in our world.
Know what it meant?
Did
Joseph know what it meant in the dream that he had when he dreamt about the sheaves bowing down? And the sun and the moon
and
the stars.
You've got a good question. I'll answer your question. That's a good question because I'm going to address that issue. Good thing you brought that up. Because now they had it. We already read there that he remembered the dreams. Two of them. All right. Remember those two dreams? One of them was the sheaves. And the other one was what? The stars, the moon, and the sun bowing to him. Pretty powerful, isn't it? Okay? So I have a parallel. And remember that everything in Genesis is a picture of someone. We have these dreams, we have these outlets, we have these events of people's lives. They are a picturing of something. What are they picturing of? Picturing of the what? What was that? Messiah. Okay. Now, what we need to backtrack just a little bit. That's true. It does picture revelation of the Messiah. And we have to go back to Bereshit, verse 1. What does the first verse in the Bible say? Some of you know it in Hebrew? What is it in Hebrew? Va'et. Bereshit para et. Bereshit para Elohim et. Hashemayim va'et ha'aretz. Okay, so what we've seen here in the very beginning is what? The creation, the Creator, what He is doing. So it's not just about the Messiah, but through the creation, the Creator of heaven and earth, He is revealing unto us from the very beginning what the story is all about. And what reason why I spend so much time in the book of Hebrews is because why? I mean, the book of Genesis is why? It's the Bereshit, it's the beginning of things. It's the beginning of things, not the end. The beginning of things, right? You've heard me say it many, many times. So I just want to make sure you get this in your mind. Because now we're going to the point here, we have to ask ourselves some questions here about Joseph. Yes, had a question?
No, I just said God tells the end from the beginning.
Correct.
Right?
Yes. He reveals it, basically. He reveals that which was hidden in the beginning, in the beginning. Kind of a confusing way. But we're learning, I hope we can learn. We learn the book of Genesis is probably the most, well, it's the most beginning point. It's the start of something. If it's not there, it cannot be written any place else in the Bible. Has to have a beginning there. And where is the ending at? Revelations. All right. We won't go there today. But you know, and the beginning is bigger than the end. And when you begin something, big bang, right? It gets bigger and bigger and bigger. It expands. It gets larger and larger. Right? We know about, in the book of Daniel, about the stone, right? Come down and smashed on the toes. We're talking about a stone. It got bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. That's to tell you the actions of the Creator of heaven and earth and what He does, how He thinks, how He acts. And I had this conversation. Some people come and ask me, says, I don't know what God thinks. And yet we have from the book of Revelations, He tells us in detail how He thinks. He tells us exactly what He's made up of. He tells us exactly where He's going. He tells us exactly the purpose why He's doing what He's doing. He tells us in the detail, extreme detail. And we say, well, no, He doesn't. Yes, He does. Where has He hidden anything from us? He only hides from us if we transgress and go against Him. Why would He reveal something to us when we don't like Him? Let me ask you a question. If there was a total, if someone didn't like you, what do you do? Go up and tell them everything about yourself? And become, you know, no, you say, well, you stay away. You back away. You don't have anything to do with the person, right? Well, same thing with God. He's no different than anybody else. Now, what is God made up of? Spirit. He's not made up of flesh and blood. Spirit came before creation. I'm sure. Spirit was before creation, right? So everything came from that which once was. We didn't come from the evolutionary concept. You've heard me say it before. It came from something that was. What was? The Elohim. The Creator of heaven and earth. It was Him. It was Him that makes everything. It came from Him. It didn't come from a Big Bang series. It came from Him. He created everything. And it was with Him from the beginning. Right? We got that narrowed down. So let's go back to Joseph here. And it's very interesting here. Joseph knew exactly where to get the information. Now, he didn't have written inside of him Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. He didn't have written with him Deuteronomy, Leviticus, Exodus, Numbers, or Genesis. He didn't have that. Wasn't there for him to sit there and open up and prove the Word of God. Now we in our world, because of our time lapse, we have to rely heavily upon what is written. If you accept that it is true, you must accept it is true. If you doubt that which he says, then he cannot give you any more information. Now, Joseph didn't doubt. Now, he's still a man like you and I. All men fall short of the glory of God. We know that. We don't have an awful lot of detail, and it's very precise, a lot of detail of, quote, the sins of Joseph, right? God doesn't want us, it's like a dead issue to God. We don't know the great sins of Isaac. It's like a dead issue of God. We don't know the great sins of Abraham. It's like a dead issue with God. Why? Because he's the God of the what? The living. All right, so he's going to talk about living and talk about life. And so when Joseph had his dreams, the dream about the sheaves coming down and his rose up. They were all lying down and his rose up. Who was he talking to? Who was he talking to? His brothers. All right. What brother wasn't there? Benjamin wasn't there. Benjamin was born. Joseph is 17 years old. And when that dream came through. Now, his brothers immediately understood the dream. Isn't that fascinating? Now, prior to that, it says they hated Joseph because he was, quote, favored by his daddy. Why would Jacob favor Joseph over the rest of his sons?
His beloved.
Okay. How many of the sons of Jacob was God revealing truth to? One. Who was the one he's revealing truth to?
Joseph.
Now, what about Jacob? Did God reveal truth to Jacob? Yeah, but God did not reveal truth to his brother, did he? Now, Jacob didn't earn it. Joseph didn't earn it. It was what God said, I am going to do this. None of the men walked away with great high honors other than by themselves being human beings. But they did walk away with high honors of responding to Devarim, Elohim, the words of God. Now, I look back at my life, and I hope you maybe look back in your life too, that we have, in our world, we have to study and go into the Word. We have to study it. So what do you mean? What do you mean? And start living by what it says. Now, these men are the beginning and Bereshit of the living. Isn't that fascinating? So God deals with them first to let us know more about them. Now it says here that Joseph, verse 7, we saw his brothers. He knew them. I'm reading this in English, the New King James Version, because I think I like the writing better. Made himself strange unto them. That's an odd statement. What do you think it meant when he made himself strange unto them?
He went out of his way so they would not recognize him. He was obviously shaved. He was dressed like an Egyptian person would be of high status. He was using an interpreter, even though he didn't need to use one. He was just really going out of his way to hide himself.
Not let them know who he is. Now, that's very important because we go into the next chapter. We won't go into that today. Next chapter even clarifies it even more. Yes.
Being recognized by his brothers.
Okay, how old was he when he was taken away? 17 years. Now he's 38. Now you think a 17-year-old, 38 years later, he doesn't look like a 17-year-old with a, right?
He immediately recognizes.
He recognizes, brothers, because, I mean, it's easy to recognize his brother. How old was Reuben when Joseph was born? He was in his 40s, at least. Already beard shaved. All his brothers, he was very young. The rest of them are much older. Because it was late in his old age that Jacob had him. How old was Jacob when he had Joseph? Said that last week, remember? Yes?
I think, think of it this way. I mean, we grow, with the way human beings grow, we grow a lot more between, let's say, the age of 7 and 17 than we do between the age of 17 and 27. And certainly we have grown up more between the ages of 17 and 27 than we do between 27 and 37. At some point, your physical characteristics and this kind of thing, the growth slows down a little bit. But there, I could definitely say that there is no way that they would have recognized him from 17 to almost 40 years old.
What's more horrifying?
The answer why they didn't recognize him. I'm just kind of playing with this one. I struggled with this for quite a bit. A lot of what you said, yes, I agree with. But knowing the Egyptian culture, he probably had eyeliner on, the eyelash, makeup, you know, everything.
Plus, what was he wearing?
Well, I think it goes.
Now, that's important. He wore a certain robe that he had to wear for others to recognize exactly who he is.
As far as his brothers, though, I think he was so unrecognizable because he was so...
I understand that. He should have not been recognized as a Hebrew. That's the will of the Creator. He didn't want them to recognize who this guy was, so the Creator went out of his way to deliberately change the entire focus, makeup, and personality of the Joseph. Now he's a different person, quite radically different person. He doesn't even look like a Hebrew. He doesn't even act like a Hebrew. He doesn't even talk like a Hebrew. I'm sorry, he wasn't, quote, Jewish, in a quote. He didn't look like one.
He's almost a type of the Ecclesia.
All right. We're not going to...
I bet you $5 that after living in Egypt for 20 years... Even his Hebrew language, whatever that language was,
right.
His original language, whatever that Hebrew Jewish language was, he would have spoken it with an Egyptian accent after being in Egypt for 20 years.
Well, he might have then. We don't know that. I grant you, he would have had a dialecting change in his dialect. I don't surprise in that. Now we had to picture ourselves something.
As second in command for Pharaoh. He would have dressed accordingly, and he wore, what was it, the Pharaoh's ring that he'd given him?
Correct.
And he certainly is going to look like a person in command rather than the brother that they had tossed to the wind.
As we get into the next chapter, we'll get a chapter next week, but because the very fascinating wording that is there in the second chapter, on the next chapter, which kind of even separates Joseph even more so than any other situation at hand. But we're not there yet. Now, we're looking at Joseph. By the way, Jacob was 79 years old when Joseph was born. And Reuben was well into his, probably nearing, at that time, 18, 19 years old. Because he pulled out really quickly right after the birth of Joseph. And they were 20 years in Laban. And so Reuben would have been probably, when he left and moved into Shechem, he was probably in his 20s, if not 30s, by the time they killed the people of Shechem. Talk about that. See, he's a grown man. And we have his brothers much older than he is. All of them are older except for, of course, Benjamin. But let's get on with the story. Where am I at now? Backtrack here just a minute. In verse 4 of Genesis 42, there's a statement that Jacob made. And I find it very strange when I first read it. And I said, oh, but however, I do understand it. I hope they'll clarify it at the end of today's message. And he said, I'm reading this now in 1611 English, but Benjamin, Joseph's brother, Jacob sent not with his brethren, for he said, lest peradventure mischief befall him. Well, that Hebrew word, mischief, means hurt. That there something was going to happen to him and he was going to get hurt badly. Now, I asked myself, that's interesting. What was going through this guy's mind? I hope we'll be able to clarify it today. I think I got it today. Maybe it's going to be next week. But you'll see the parallel. Incredible. And I find it very fascinating. Now, when he said, he made himself strange. That is not to know who he was. Now, it made strange. And he spoke roughly. That's a pretty severe word. Very rude. Spoke with accusations. Accused them of all sorts of things. Right? And they said they were, what kind of men? Honorable, upright. How could they say they were honorable and upright? Now, don't get that confused with the other term of upright. It means, okay, remember the dream that Jacob had? All the stocks were down. One was upright. Well, same word. Doesn't mean right compared to wrong, just what that is now standing up on end. The same thing here. He says, we are men who are standing up. Okay? Because of whom? Jacob, their father. They knew their father was a just man, an upright man. And so they were doing this in the sense that they are basically related directly to him. And they are from one man. That is, they are from Jacob. Now, I'm going to backtrack a little bit here to Genesis 37. You don't have to turn there. And starting at verse 4, it says, when his brothers saw that their father loved him more than his brethren, they hated him and would not speak peacefully unto them. That's interesting. And what did Jacob do in return? Did he speak peacefully unto them? No, he spoke harshly to them. And then he's a 17-year-old. He's not a 27, 47, 97, 87, 107-year-old man. He's only 17 years old when they spoke not peacefully toward him. And the very next verse in that chapter, that Joseph dreamed a dream and he told his brethren, and they hated him yet more. Oh, that's interesting. And he said to them, here I pray you this dream which I dreamt. For behold, there were binding sheaves in the field, and lo, my sheaf arose and also stood upright. And behold, your sheaves stooped around about and made obedience unto my sheaf. Of course, his brother says, who do you think you are, right? You think that we're going to do that to you? And they hated him more. So I've got three hates. Disliked him. Now I hate him. Now they hate him again. And of course, we know about that dream. And I told you that Jake, the only one that wasn't there was Benjamin. Then he had another dream. Remember what the other dream was? He dreamt about the stars and he dreamt about the moon. He dreamt about this. And then his father was kind of even upset, right? Well, now, what does the scripture say about his father? What was his father doing? What was his father's conclusion? Verse 11 and 37, verse 11. Yes. What would Jacob think of the dream?
He thought that what Joseph meant that himself and Joseph's mother would bow down.
Right. That's how he saw it. However, comma, it didn't happen, did it? It was Joseph who came to his father for the blessing. It wasn't Joseph. It wasn't Jacob that went to Joseph for the blessings, right? Oh, so what dream is this about? Is that yet to be fulfilled? If this is a parallel to the Messiah, it is yet to be fulfilled. Now, as we go on and continue on with this story of Joseph, there's certain names that pop up.
Of Pharaoh.
Complete control of all the universe. In the book of Hebrews, it says, not all things are under his feet, man's feet. The sun and the moon, stars, were not under the authority or jurisdiction of man. Yet. Now, the only way they can be is when we and all of us submit ourselves unto the Messiah, because he now has jurisdiction. All power, all authority, and all principalities now are under his feet. Now, at that point in time, the Messiah raised up. Now he has power over the sun. He has power over the moon. He has power over the stars. Now, we say, oh, no, that's evolutionary concept. He had no control. Well, it's because we've been raised up in evolutionary concept that we believe that God has no control over what he made. However, he took all that authority and gave it over to his son. Okay. Now it has to go back to who was the promise given to? Farther back.
Abraham.
There you go. Abraham. He's fulfilling the promise with Abraham. And the picture we see with Jacob is a picture of how the Messiah is going to take over the world. Not how Joseph takes over Egypt. Picture of how Joseph took over Egypt is very, very fascinating. And we will not get there in detail yet. But he was harsh. He taxed them. He took all of their wealth. He took everything unto what, himself? No! He took it all and gave it unto Pharaoh. The Egyptian nation became poverty-stricken. And had to submit by the power. Who brought forth the famine? Did Jacob bring forth the famine? Did Joseph bring forth the famine? Did Abraham bring forth the famine? Who brought forth the famine?
Elohim.
All right. Ha Elohim. Let's get that specifically clear. Because that's what he told. That's what he told Pharaoh. The God is going to do this. And that, when he understood that dream, Joseph knew exactly the next position he was going to take. Now, I'm going to ask you a question.
Is that also a picture of the sun and moon bowing down? Is that also a picture that the sun god and the moon god would also bow down?
Mm-hmm.
Or is that just another?
I understand what you're saying. I do not say that. I think his creation means everything is going to go under. All principalities be under his feet. That is true. And even any Elohim, Hebrew is very important. Elohim is a very generic word. And Elohim means a one who has many powers. It's a plurality. El means power, and you have Elohim with plurality, means many powers. When Daniel will be going through soon the dream or the calling up of the spirit, I can't remember what it says in Hebrew, and Elohim rose up from the earth. Oh, wow, you mean the Elohim? No, a Elohim. Oh, I mean, this particular person, this being, and what does Apostle Paul say we do? We fight against what? Plurality. We fight against the principalities, plurality, of the air. Now, principalities, the book of, I'm way off course here.
When are we going to start 43?
But the book of Daniel explains just principalities. But, and my son explained to you about why he says he's the Lord of the armies. Doesn't mean he has a bunch of army guys that are really for his side. He can call forth any army he so desires, whether you like the army or not. He can bring forth, he called forth Nebuchadnezzar. What, he was a nice guy, wasn't he? No. What did he do? Major destruction. What was he supposed to do? Destroy the temple? And he did. That's what God wanted him to do, and he, God, is in control of that army. Now, let's get back here, if I can get back here. Good thing I only went to this first chapter only. Of course, we have this scene, his no. And in verse 14, now very interesting. I'm going to try to do this to explain what I'm saying. Now, Joseph is talking. But in their ears, who was talking? Zaphanat Paneh. And Zaphanat Paneh said unto them, this is what I spoke unto you, saying, you are spies. Now, see, that's what they heard coming out of this Egyptian. He didn't look like a Hebrew. He had a different image, a different outlook, a different look upon his face. Approximately around the age of 38, somewhere in that age. Because he had 1 year of drought, and he had to come back, and probably Joseph now is about 38 years of age. This is my estimation. Doesn't make any difference. It's in his 30s. And then he says something very fascinating, which really, when I read the Jewish commentaries, they're very, very upset with this. But see, it wasn't Joseph that was swearing. It was who was swearing by the life of Pharaoh. They didn't hear Joseph swearing by the life of Pharaoh. They heard whom swearing by the life of Pharaoh. They come from Egypt. Zaphanat Paneah. That's when they heard swearing. You don't swear unto a being that is contrary to God. However, if you are playing and acting and doing what Elohim wants you to do, all of a sudden it sounds like the creator of heaven earth says, go ahead and swear by his name. And he did. Now, that was struck fear. As we keep on the story, keep in mind what Joseph said later. All right. He swore by the life of Pharaoh. And then he put a distance between them. What was the distance between him? What was the distance between Joseph and his brothers? What was the distance? He separated himself from them. What was the distance?
I don't know, 25 feet.
3 days. 3 days. Distance involves time. All right. Believe it or not, time has a distance, right? We have a distance. The distance is time. And 3 days. Oh, that's fascinating. Why 3 days? Do you have any answer for that?
Because anytime you find a three in these texts, it's messianic.
Okay, now why did he go off, separate himself for three? What was Joseph doing? Well, the next sentence tells you. He returned and Joseph, which is Zaphanat Paneh, said unto them on the third day, do this for I fear Elohim. So we see 3 days. What was Joseph doing in those 3 days? Was he gone off just playing for golf and, you know, doing business as a lord of the land? What was he doing? Well, we come back. He says he was my personal thinking. I think he communicated with Elohim by a prayer or by a vision, by a dream. More than likely a dream, because that's how God spoke with Joseph more than any other position. And now Joseph now does something different. And now he says, if you be true men, if you be true, you be upright, you be decent, let one of your brothers be bound in the house of your prison. Go ye, carry a corn to your family, and so on and so forth. Now, very fascinating. Who did he take?
Shimon.
Why him? Why not Judah? Why not Reuben? Why not Dan? Why not Naphtali? Why not somebody else? Not yet, Daniel. I don't have to ask the question first.
Does it have to do with the reaction to the rape of Dinah? The two brothers that went?
Okay. Any other idea? All right. If they now this Joseph's learning something new here, by the way. But one thing he did know, what happened when Joseph was thrown in the pit? He was bound. Oh, I wonder who bound him. Now, listen very quickly. Daniel, go ahead.
The same one who was likely going to kill him. He was a ruthless killer to begin with. That's why Levi and him are cursed with such a thing. You guys, as Jacob says, you are both horrible killers.
Yes.
And so I think Simeon and Levi together, like, it was probably their own personal ideas. Hey, look at this kid. No one will know. Let's kill him now. I think Simeon was probably the guy who was bound him and wouldn't be surprised if he was volunteering to kill him, too.
See, you were close, weren't you? Very close. It had to do with the actions and what Simeon does do. A very, assuming, strong man, not a weakling like we have today of men, you know. I'm not speaking of myself, of course. Okay. And it says, and they took from him Simeon and bound him before their eyes. I find that fascinating. What happened to Joseph? He was bound before the eyes of his brothers. Now, why would you think he had to be bound? You think Simeon was not wanting to be bound? Why didn't he just voluntarily? Okay, I'm your man. No, they bound him. I think he probably fought. And he lost. Just like Joseph fought. And Joseph lost. Keep those things in mind. I'm not there yet. I'm going to try. Now, this is very fitting. Why is Simeon? Simeon is one of the ones who bound Joseph before the eyes of his brothers. Why did Joseph need to be bound to bind Simeon? Was Simeon wrestling? Maybe. But they said that they, this is Joseph's, Reuben's statement, that they saw the anguish of his, Joseph's, soul when he besought us, the brothers, and we would not hear. So, you think that vengeance are mine, saith Joseph? In a sense, that is true. Vengeance are mine, saith Joseph. Well, right now he's going to put forth punishment on them. They deserve punishment, not mercy. Mercy does not come until chapter 43 or chapter 44, something like that. Mercy does not come to them until then, yes.
This shows that they knew how God works. They've been waiting for God to get back on top of them, and here it is, and they knew what it was and when it was hitting.
Yeah. Because, see, verse 21, I think it was 21. Where did Reuben say that? I can't see it right up here. Oh, yeah, in verse 21, it says, And then Reuben answered and said to them, what are you saying? What's going on? Do not sin against the child, and ye would not hear Reuben. And therefore, behold, his blood is also required. This interesting statement he said, blood is also required. Now, what did it tell Joseph? Oh. Reuben thinks I'm dead. Reuben thinks I'm dead. Simeon knew he wasn't because they didn't kill him. Judah knew it wasn't because he didn't kill him. And probably Levi knew it wasn't because he didn't kill him. They faked his death. So Reuben's in this thing. Oh my, he is dead, and now the blood is going to be upon us. That tells me something. What happened? What did Reuben do? He what?
He had left briefly.
He left. Out, and Joseph was gone. And then he says, what am I going to do? I have to answer to my father. Why was it important? Why was he so terrified answering to his father? Why? No. There was no blood yet. He's the oldest son. And the firstborn is responsible for the livelihood and protection of the rest of the siblings. Biblically, you know that's true. The firstborn son is responsible from that point on. We see here that Reuben begs his father and says, kill my sons if I don't do the job right this time. So Reuben is already in his brain. He wants to make sure he does the job right. And if it costs him, it will cost him his sons' lives. He's going to bring back. He wants to bring back and make sure that he, Reuben, will lay down his son's life, including his own, by the way. It's not completely clear there. For if Benjamin does not return. This time he's going to keep an eye on him. Unlike he did before, he abandoned Joseph. Instead of standing up against his brothers, he abandoned it. Now he comes in and says, I am going to do this. Now remember, Joseph was thinking, Reuben was thinking, the death happened to him. All right, I'll move along here pretty quick. And of course, you know, they went on their way and the sacks were opened up and lo and behold, now mercy was given to them, but we're not going to talk about that mercy. It wasn't really a mercy, it was a test. And we'll go into that today. In verse 28, and he said unto them, his brothers, this one that had found the money, my money is restored, and lo, even in my sack. And their heart failed, and they were afraid, saying to one another, what is this Elohim has done unto us? That's an interesting statement. Now, it doesn't tell you who opened up the sack. It doesn't tell you which brother opened up the sack. For sure we know it wasn't Simeon, because he wasn't there. Why has God done this to us? What was the fear? What were they afraid of? Who were afraid of what? They were afraid of Zaphonat-Paneh. They were afraid of that man. Because that man was going to have vengeance. If, they didn't know that. But he was the one that had power over them. Remember he saw the dream? Oh wow, look at this. They're bowing before me. The only one that wasn't there bowing before him was Benjamin. All right. I'll try to wrap this up really quick. If I go too far, am I going too fast? Okay. I do want to go back here, verse 37, where Reuben spoke to his father, saying, slay my sons if I bring him not back to thee. Deliver him unto my hand, and I will bring him to thee again. Now, here's a commitment that Reuben has done. Remember, Reuben assumes Joseph is dead because he saw the garment. And remember, the brothers didn't all go and tell their father. They sent one of their brothers to the father to show him, I've got a funny feeling it might have been. This is my thinking. It means nothing. might have been Reuben himself. Because he had to answer to his father why Joseph was missing. All right? You see the picture of what I'm talking about? Not all of them were evil, wicked men. Well, you know, clarify the terminology. I'm not going to go that far. They were not upright. Right. Let's go back now, just a brief. I'm wrapping it up. What has happened in Joseph's life? Well, let's go back farther than Joseph. What was happened before Joseph was born? Keep going.
Because verse 38,
he says, this is Jacob saying, my son shall not go down with you, for his brother is dead, and he is left alone. If mischief, harm befalls him by the way in which ye go, then shall ye bring upon my gray hairs with sorrow to the grave. Oh. Let's go back in time. Let's go back several years. Let's go back when Jacob married two sisters. You remember those? All right. Did the two sisters love one another, enjoy one another's company? All right. They were, what were they doing? For whom? They're rivaling for Jacob. We went through the names, right? Of all the sons, right? And every one of them sons were named not because that's what they are, but in retaliation toward the other sister. Every one of those names is retaliation toward the other. So there was strife, lots of strife. And guess what? The maids, since they had no free choice, their sons became and were named by the two sisters who are at completely fighting one another over the man named Jacob. Jacob was caught, quote, in the middle? Well, maybe, maybe not. I'm not going to go there. But we have a picture here, and it says each one had a maid, and we know that these two sisters fought for Jacob's attention and how they used to, their maids to upstart each other. The two sisters named all of the sons of Jacob. Each name was an assault upon each the other sister. An assault. It isn't the nature of the people. It isn't nature of the son or a nature of anything else. The names were given in retaliation and assault. Now, since the strife of the two sisters would have been an influence upon all of the sons of Jacob. Right? Do you think that the sons of Jacob were taking sides? The sons of Leah and the maid of Leah were taking sides against Rachel and the maid of Rachel's kids. You mean there's a family feud? Now, this is why Jacob said what he said. Unless there's harm going to come to Benjamin, I can't let him go. Where was the harm going to come from? He knew where it was going to come from. It's going to come from Leah's sons against Rachel's sons. You understand what I'm saying? So now we have an understanding. He says, harm will come. He wasn't talking about harm that Pharaoh was going to do. He wasn't talking about harm of a bandit coming along. He wasn't talking about harm, something else to take place. He's talking about harm would happen because of the strife between the two. Now, the strife between them was very early, wasn't it? Remember at 17 years old, they hated Joseph? Their compassion was not that great for Benjamin. All right? All right? That's right. And they had to protect, yeah. The only one that seemed to, at this point in time, which I have real confidence in, seemed to repent of his rotten, stinking attitude, no. Reuben was going now to no longer permit this to happen. He didn't like it what actually happened to Joseph in the first place. He says, why are you going to harm this child for? Meaning Joseph. They didn't have enough guts inside of himself to fight against his brothers. Reuben was the firstborn. He still held that responsibility no matter what. I don't see Reuben in this picture of being an evil person. Weak! Okay? Yes. Like many of us, they are. We have a hard time standing up against odds that are really against us. Right? Any more questions?
Is this a northern-southern kingdom thing, too? Like, you know how all the wars, but and you know how the kingdom got divided, northern-southern? Is this, does it fit here or no?
No, not yet. That fits later on at the end of the book of Genesis. We're not there yet.
Janice, it didn't matter about Pharaoh or this guy that Joseph, I mean, that I thought was where the fear
nothing,
was.
Nothing, because he was the very first part of this thing. He was afraid to let Joseph, I mean, Benjamin, go down in the first place when they first went down, feeling it was harm going to come to Benjamin. The harm would had to come from the sons of Leah. All right, because he already knew there was evidence already there that they hated and despised bitterly Joseph. So rivalry was right there. All right, so he was very well self-evident in that point. Yes.
I also think that Jacob could not have been reassured by Reuben saying, "Oh, if we don't bring Benjamin back, I'll let you kill me and kill my grandsons." It's like two wrongs don't make a right. Benjamin being dead, it isn't going to make Jacob's heart any warmer for Reuben to be dead and the grandsons to be dead. That doesn't warm a parent's heart that if one kid's dead, oh, let's kill the other one too.
Yeah, right. He didn't trust the confidence of Reuben. Now, we'll get into the prophecy of Reuben later, but not tonight. I'm way late. One more question.
Well, the concept of offering his two sons is not about a replacement, but about showing he knows who his father thought the harm was going to come from. And so he's putting his chips on the table saying, no, you know, saying, as much as I love my sons, your son will not come to harm.
Right. Right. I grant you, Reuben is at that point. He was still not trusted, though, because he failed before. He's going to fail again. Hey, what was the biggest failure of Reuben? Sleeping with one of...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, right, that one, yeah, right. Oh, I mean, he lost his whatever it was. Okay, I'm going to have to call it quits. Yeah, one quick question.
Okay, well, part of the thing about Reuben leaving his kids there is a way of saying, Dad, I will take my own life. I will be sure that Benjamin comes back at the risk of my own life, and he will have to raise my kids because I'm going to put my life on the line to be sure Benjamin's coming back.
Okay.
Because he didn't do that with Joseph, and he should have.
Now, in the next chapter, we won't go in today because it's getting late. But to be very fascinating thing, someone else spoke up saying the same thing. We'll get to there later. Now, it won't come to an end until I finish the story. But I want you to keep in mind here that we have a, quote, deception taking place. The deception is Joseph is not telling who he is. He's deliberately hiding that which he could reveal, as his name so states.